Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jenny Johnson. Jenny Johnson's poems have appeared or are forthcoming in Best New Poets 2008, The Southern Review, and Blackbird. She was awarded a scholarship to attend the 2010 Breadloaf Writers' Conference. Currently, she is an MFA candidate at Warren Wilson College and a part-time instructor at the University of Pittsburgh. Hi, Jenny. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Congratulations on all your publications and your awards here.
Thank you.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. Thanks.
Okay. So you're going to start with some poems from your manuscript, I guess. Huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Artifacts. One. The boots of the dead poet were size 11, licorice black with a stitch of blue up the calf. Without the long legs that once filled them, sent them scuffing through the San Joaquin Valley, they slouch on an oak pedestal in the university library next to a white placard that tells an anecdote about the writer's irreverence at staff meetings, his casual drop of the F-bomb. Standing this close, I wonder if my ogling is offending him or if he might nudge me gently, longing to make a joke out of the strangeness of the scene, the way absence blinds us to the scale of our attachment to someone else's objects. 2. I loved a woman once who curated loss. She was a sculptor. After we had parted in rage at the corner of 16th and Dolores, after our old bed frame slid off the car roof, splinters flurrying down I-80, after I'd moved thousands of miles away, she called to ask if she might build out of sugar cubes a replica of my house. She said for herself she needed to see it, but didn't know the measurements. How do I explain my consent? That evening, alone in my bungalow, the yellow tape unspooling, I measured closet widths, calculated the feet between hedges. I wanted her to craft it perfectly to scale. 3. When my grandmother died, my aunt lifted her camera at the small funeral, toggled the zoom button, and started taking pictures of the blue-veined hands, a still life, fingers draped along the blue polyester dress, clasped across a plump body in a mahogany casket. When someone asked her why she was doing it, she mentioned the macrame, the doll parts, the needlepoint, all those things her mother used to do with those hands. Had her grieving crossed a line? Someone sitting beside me wanted to stop her then, beg her to sit down, to leave the body be. One of my obsessions is archival, and this next poem deals more specifically with queer lineage and queer archival. And it begins with part of a definition that I came across in my Oxford American Dictionary. Severe. Severe, adjective, unsparing, difficult, disciplined. By way of illustration, a storm, a hairdo, a punishment, or the face of my great aunt in the failing memory of the few who can snap her cool features into place. Overheard usage, the old maid, hair cropped unfashionably short, in mannish trousers, how else to describe her, but severe, an edge, or panache, like Joan of Arc, suited to ride, her chain mail shimmering, iridescent as a tarpon, lunging from an angler's tackle, a hook dangling by a wire. Is it genetic? The clean line of my jaw in the blue porch light? What if I nick your finger, punish you like a paper cut, or kiss you with desire's accuracy? I mean, the way a skater's blade etching a figure eight kisses the ice. Have I taken you too far? As if to be butch is to be made of mythical perimeters, and not the sky revealing itself between storms in sudden, naked flashes. I found my great aunt's face in a grainy yearbook photo, absent of restraint, a playful eyebrow raised, a smile so genteel, and at her ear, a blonde helix, stray curl, almost too exceptionally soft for sight. This next one is a more interior meditation into queer memory. Late bloom. What were you fending off? You were Zorro, only less cunning, in cutoffs, wielding your branch tip to catch web centers as if piercing the flesh of foes. Sort it out. The name of the spotted apple on the leafy floor in the woods, a half mile from your white-walled bedroom where the FM stereo was always tuned to the same country station your girl crush loved, was gall. Name of the shell withering under leaf rot in that spot where the surprise lilies sometimes remember, sometimes forget to bloom. Touch a weevil and it will fall to the ground, legs and antennae tucked. Blink and the Arctic fox becomes snow. The gecko, toes spread against a tree trunk, passes for lichen. Of all the ways a creature can conceal itself, I must have relied on denial. There were the Confederate bumper stickers, pressure from seniors to tailgate, the spindly legs of a freshman scissoring out a trash can. How just the smell of Old Spice could make my muscles contract, like a moth, wings folded, the color of a dead leaf in October. So that she might hear her favorite song, my voice would drop. And if the DJ answered, I would be Tim, Charlie, Luke, Jason, every name but my own, truer than gold. Wasn't I the stripe in a tiger's eye, the dapple in the flanks of an Appaloosa, a heart hunting after a body? In daylight, how would I possibly explain? There is a border between the prey and the predator. I know this. I know how to freeze, and I know how to forage.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jenny Johnson, reading her poetry. In the, I think it was the first poem that you read, you had this great image. She wanted to build out of sugar cubes a replica of my house. I thought that was just terrific. And I noticed in other poems, you know, images that are certainly not ordinary, but coming from an oblique place or a really unexpected place. Can you talk about your construction of those?
I like telling stories, and so some are just old stories, you know, that you pull in. But also,
I mean, you have the stories, but you're the one that's creating the way to speak about them. And you know, it's really, really unusual. You know, she wanted to build out of sugar cubes a replica of my house. I mean, the phrasing and
the way you set it up. I write really slowly. And so, I guess the one way I would answer that is that, that section of that poem, I reworked and I reworked and mm-hmm. I reworked just to try to figure out the right way to get it and also the right way to try to talk about memory and the scale of memory, how miniature things seem and sometimes how gigantic things seem at different distances. Mm-hmm. And so I know that with that part, I was trying to capture that.
Mm-hmm. When you say you write slowly, what do you mean?
Well, I don't know how fast other writers write, but just that... You know, the first draft comes out, but then there's just a lot of tinkering. I don't know. I have a friend who, when we get together and we talk about our writing process, she kind of jokes that I like to sculpt Mm-hmm. So I like to just keep tinkering with the same line over and over before moving to the next.
Mm-hmm. There is a sort of sculpted feel to the lines, even in listening. Well, and part of it, I think, is the way you're reading.
Okay.
Very deliberately, I think, which is great. I mean, it's very clear and methodical in a way. So it's all working together in that way. Okay. Could you read some more poems?
Yeah, sure. The next one is longer. It's in sections, and I'll pause between sections. Vigil. When I pedal down her streets, space and ecstasy are a single surface. Wind at our backs, white bungalows, striped awnings up and down Maine. I cycle fast, pant leg cuffed, calf streaked with grease. I thread my way through locked traffic, past the canal, around Belle Isle. I glide towards her, and the glint of light that shimmers off the reflector on her rusted 10-speed. Our first date. I fear if I blink, I'll forget the dimension of this city, lose foothold. Trapezing across railroad tracks, I follow her to a spot along the James. She kneels down to sunbathe on rocks. I lie down beside her. What else could I do? She points across the river to an osprey nest. Tufts of straw jut out of a distant utility tower. Silhouettes of birds circle overhead, eyeing us, eyeing their nests. I need to tell you about the seeing that goes on between two people, around two people, not the touching, the watchfulness. This is not just about love, though I love her as much now as then. It's that she's always looking out. If I follow the dotted lines of her gazes, she's looking out at something just out of range. A river otter floating at the base of a cliff, a damselfly dipping her abdomen into a still dark lake, a wasp out a tiny hole in a hollow gall, that wasp lifting its legs. Years ago, I followed the gaze of a kid looking at me through a mirror in a public restroom in a park in California. I knew by the duration of her looking that I was already a spot in the glass, a small detour in her life that she was building a barricade against. When she presses her nose to the glass, every exhale fogs the exterior. I knew her. I was her. I left her. On lunch duty at the public school where I worked, I worried for her every single day, because I sometimes found the shadow of her against a wall in a hallway or stairwell where a boyfriend would press his palms into the tiles that surrounded her body as though, if they might spin from vertical to horizontal, he would be ready to drop and do 50 push-ups up and down against her frame. Already jeans sagging, he's excelling at this performance, lifting his chin to salute the other guys who pass by, as she looks longingly not at him, but at the spot at the center of his ribcage. If you love someone, Rilke says, you must be the guardian of her solitude. I picture this solitude, a physical as well as psychic space, a shell extending around her frame, the room her elbow needs to make just now, the way a disk of light amplifies a solar eclipse. And because I am a woman who forgets sometimes that she is a woman, I always slip my shoes off and knock at least 3 times before crossing that threshold, before presuming I'm welcome here. Out the window of a speeding car, a man yells, "Dyke." I don't know why. It's Friday night before our date, catching a late movie. Have I placed us at risk, hair short, bound tight? A silence bristles between us, hot ash about to blow across a paper city. I see us as a low-budget docudrama, a dim photo of the White Night riots. See us without context, as a tourist might, with eyebrows raised, eyeing two queers. What I don't know how to reconcile is how to guard ourselves when we're reliant on another's recognition to be perceived. Not that she ever needed me to guard her. Her biceps are firm as she folds me over in the dark, the way I like it. I won't cover your eyes, because I need to show you this, too. Leviticus on a fence in Wyoming, the gay blood ban, Sakia gun disremembered. Wherever you are, come back, she says. Come back. And eyeing us, a kid on a tricycle, dinging her brass bell, pedals closer.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jenny Johnson, reading her poetry. Really nice poem.
Thanks.
I want to talk a minute about what you referenced earlier, your archival obsessions.
Okay.
And you also referenced queer memory. And I'm wondering, I'm thinking that those overlap.
Definitely. Yeah, I've been thinking about how, I mean, there's an intersection between public memory and personal memory. And I feel like I sort of oscillate between writing about both, and then sometimes they intersect because they do intersect. And I guess I think it's kind of fun to not just think about how gender gets constructed in our society, but also how we construct time and who we remember and who we leave out. And so, yeah, I've been specifically doing some research on some two great aunts of mine who I just don't think their story's been told. And so mm-hmm. I've been trying to figure that out and then think about where one fits into all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just listening to the longer poem that you just read, mm-hmm. I was just, you know, struck by a lot of solid words that you were using. And I kept thinking of structure and, for example, I mean, I was just writing some down, dimension, foothold, tracks, rocks, nest, tower, circle, shell, frame. You know, it seems like there's just a lot of scaffolding and what came up in the poem, this guarding and reconciliation, this interaction or, I don't know, this movement between guarding and reconciliation. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that because space is another thing that I think I'm obsessed with. And, I mean, even feeling like I needed to say, you know, a mirror in a public restroom in a park in California, having to, like, locate, sometimes wanting to locate things so so much. I think struggling with how when you have a queer identity or a queer consciousness, how you see yourself, how others see you, the struggle for lovers to see one another, and then how people in different contexts may not read mm-hmm. just all the different ways in which we read different spaces and feel safe mm-hmm. or don't feel safe.
So are you saying that all of that locating is an effort for clarity or for visibility in the poem, or
I think the poem is on one hand, you know, about this relationship between a speaker and a lover, but then it's also about keeps talking to a you, so it's also about wanting the viewer or the reader or the listener to understand and to be invited into trying to understand mm-hmm. these dynamics. Mm-hmm. Not that they wouldn't, but what if they don't?
Yeah. It's an interesting question. Like, how much work do you do on that behalf of the listener or viewer?
Yeah.
And how do you script them? And that can make you crazy, but also makes you question your own, I think the writer never knows the reader's facilities. So then it brings up question of who are you writing for?
I've been thinking about, and also just like, you know, you don't want to assume that your writer doesn't, I mean, that your reader doesn't know a lot.
Exactly. Yeah.
So.
So it's that keep, you know, constant negotiation of that is interesting, though.
Mm-hmm.
That because there's a lot of movement in your poems.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you read some more?
Sure. Ladies' arm wrestling match at the Blue Moon Diner. My grandma always told me, if life gives you lemons, throw them away. And so we loosen, shuffle off sore tendons, Tuesdays, insults catcalled out Chevy windows. Clinking whiskey glasses, we wipe away sweat and old flames. All I ever found in the gravel was the paper body, what the garter snake shed. Take off that old suit tonight, even as your good arm shudders to the mat like the moon, meaning the mouth of the Shenandoah. Take off that old suit. In new skin, come back again and again. Own this acreage, this new ground rippling under rolled sleeves. So these are some body poems. This one's called Tail. I picture the shameful length of it poking along behind me as I walk down Fifth Avenue. The odd sheen of it shimmering in shop windows. How after too many beers I lumber back into bed, its strangeness between my legs. But as the sun rises, the clean stretch, aesthetic vertebrae, how I might flex its elegant, careful weight, consider my newfound balance, how gracefully I ascend a flight of stairs, teetering on one leg, my rump poised just so. Or how I might signal to my lover, wave fondly to her through the air, lift my fur to tickle her mouth, dash a small crumb off her lips, in a midnight alley, flashing my snowy underside like a switchblade, we'd sprint through underbrush. Had I a tail, I would be luminous and lingering as a comet who traces the starry night with a broken ellipses. As a kid, I remember the small green bubble inside the carpenter's level, how it would dart from corner to corner, and how good it felt to straddle the sawhorse out behind the shed, half tomboy, half centaur. How I clenched a 2x4 between my thigh bones, and it was part of me. A nest of yellow jackets rose from beneath the splinters, and, forgetting how to move, how to cry, how to run, I let them sting and sting and sting 11 times, leaving swells on my arms, neck, legs, feet, and shoulders. O Lord of parts, O holy toolshed, when I rise from these sore bones, what have you taken? What have you left me?
I keep thinking, and I've had this written down from the beginning, keep thinking of the shadow body, you know, even though I don't really know what that is, but I keep thinking of it like what's not seen, what is behind what's seen. What's involved in the construction of a body as opposed to the, you know, organic or intuitive feeling of a body? I mean, is that moving around in your work?
Definitely, yeah. One of the other poems I have here has a bunch of shadows in it. So okay. That's really, it's interesting that those already have that in there too. Trying to think about how to articulate the bodies in my poems, and I think I find poems to be a really interesting place to construct the body figuratively. Mm-hmm. Like I like to think that what if the figurative body is as authentic as however else we articulate what bodies mm-hmm. are? Like that feels really empowering to me that, mm-hmm. you know, there's whatever body I might wake up in, but then there's the other bodies I get to imagine on the mm-hmm. page.
That's kind of cool. Okay. Okay. We have time for another poem.
Okay. James River. You are the wren scavenging for the husks of beetles. I am the trout poking through river rocks, the head of a copperhead slipping past, the shadow of what you asked for turning to husk. I am an open parachute, breeze billowing through. You are the wren, scavenging for the husks of beetles. Now I am flotsam, poking through river rocks, the detached head of a copperhead snagged on rocks. During recess, I remember the parachute in my hands, an open shadow, breeze billowing through. When everyone pulled the chute upward to run beneath, I was flotsam, poking through river rocks. The undulating blue-black shadows, the parachute faded indigo, was sweaty in my hands. Tucked beneath, one might feel whole. When everyone pulled the chute upward to run beneath. Tell me, how cold is the fluid beneath your kneecaps? The undulating blue-black shadows. How red is the air beneath your fingernails? Tucked beneath, one might feel whole. How remote is any one appendage from the other? How cold is the fluid beneath your kneecaps? Don't tell me the body won't turn on you like a corkscrew. I am the air red beneath your fingernails, the trout poking through river rocks, remote as any one appendage from the other, the shadow of what you asked for turning to husk. Don't tell me the body won't turn on you like a corkscrew. Mirror box visions. Come bare-chested in the weeds. Come as squirrels are climbing backwards. Come as dogwood blossoms come apart. Come constant as a mailman in blue shorts. Come because her mother says, you're no good. Come so hard you forget your given name. Come light drizzle, come evening rain. Come with cheeks flushed scarlet. Come down the rusty metal slide. Come slick as morning dew. Come loose, a sapling lengthening. Come honeysuckle, come glistening.
The poetry of Jenny Johnson. Thank you so much. That was great.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Wednesday night at 7:30 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.